ninth year of my privilege of serving in the capacity of Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And I thank Speaker Whiteman for generously offering me this fourth opportunity during that period of time to speak to you about Kansas courts. And I thank President Whiteman for graciously allowing this to be scheduled at this time. Mr. Speaker, I also thank you for inviting my judicial colleagues, the justices of the Kansas Supreme Court, and the judges on the Kansas Court of Appeals. Many years ago, when I was in the Marine Corps, the Navy carried us all over the Pacific. On every ship, announcements were made over the intercom system called the 1MC. Announcements began with this: "Now hear this, now hear this." The ultimate announcement said that too, but it was followed by, "This is the captain speaking." And sailors and Marines alike dropped whatever they were doing and they paid strict attention, because the captain was the ultimate authority on that ship in all matters. In fact, one captain I knew displayed a brass plaque that said, "I am the captain of this ship, and I will do as I damn well please." The people of Kansas, in their constitution, wisely decided that no single person would be completely in charge of their ship of state in all matters. So they separated the powers and created three equal branches of government. Which means that even though at this moment I might say, now hear this, this is the Chief Justice speaking, you are not obligated to drop whatever you're doing, nor obligated to pay strict attention, nor to pay any attention at all. But if you care about justice in Kansas, as our founders did, and I hope you do, then I would ask you to bring me your attention for a few minutes. Someone once said, "I believe that the federal government has an obligation to enforce the constitutional rights of even the least individual among us, wherever he may be, if those rights are being denied, and to do so at the point of a bayonet, if necessary." Now, what wild-eyed, left-leaning Hollywood celebrity said that? It was a Hollywood actor, all right, named Ronald Reagan, at his 1982 presidential news conference. And Reagan said it repeatedly during his presidency. Perhaps you were surprised to hear President Reagan speak so passionately about government enforcing constitutional rights at the point of a bayonet. After all, he was a proud champion of reducing what he considered governmental interference in people's lives. But Reagan recognized a few things in life were essential, because as governor of California, he also had said, "At any level of government, I have always subscribed to a belief that protecting the rights of even the least individual among us is basically the only excuse the government has for even existing." Fortunately, we rarely have to resort to bayonets. Instead, our constitutional rights are enforced and protected for even the lowest person among us in the Kansas court system, as administered by our approximate 1,600 employees and 260 judges across 105 counties. Some of those employees and judges are with us this afternoon in the gallery behind you. Those in rows are some of the chief judges from around the state who are responsible for the legal proceedings in our 31 judicial districts. They appear today here at their own expense. I will ask all judicial branch personnel in the gallery to stand at this time. updating you on our electronic or e-court project, which I first talked about in my speech here in 2011. One part of that project is electronic filing or e-filing. And as you know, this enables legal documents to be filed with the courts electronically. After years of work, implementation of an e-filing system has been completed in all state courts, in 105 counties, and both public courts. By June, no state court will any longer accept paper filings by attorneys. Completion of this big project was made possible because the 2014 legislature earmarked some docket fee revenues for the project for several years. I join many Kansans in thanking you for those important appropriations. It means that nearly 4.5 million legal documents have been filed without people having to travel to the courthouse to put their documents in the mail. I mentioned in past years that the long-term e-court plan has been for e-filing to eventually be integrated with an electronic case management system, different from the ones presently used by court personnel in processing cases. These two components of e-court allow us to shift from a paper-based system that will provide judges, court staff, and attorneys with immediate statewide access to case information, details, and records provided by the Kansas courts. Just a few examples of the benefits that this project will provide. It will improve case processing in our courts. It will increase the efficiency of the information delivery to all of our judges. It will increase operational efficiency by automating certain activities and streamlining others. It will maintain and improve data sharing between various governmental and public entities. And it will enable our employees in any county courthouse to work from their computers on court business in other counties. This alone is a big benefit because it allows the Supreme Court to more effectively and efficiently manage the state's court system. Eventually, e-court will also provide the public with statewide 24-hour access to some of the most frequently requested court information from any computer with an internet connection. 3 years ago, the e-court steering committee began to review exactly how to change from different computer systems in the court to one centralized case management system. The committee also worked to standardize the various practices currently performed about all the state courts. Their long study for the right vendor, I'm pleased to say, is now complete. I'm pleased to report that during the last 30 days, a contract was signed with Tyler Technologies of Plano, Texas. And the $11.5 million in the contract also came from docket fee revenues earmarked by the 2014 legislature for this purpose. Tyler has worked well with statewide judicial systems in 13 other states, and they were our committee's third choice of vendor. We anticipate that the statewide e-court project will be completed within about 4 years, and that day will bring even more uniformity and efficiency to the entire court system to benefit Kansas. One of the greatest achievements since court unification in the 1970s. In the meantime, we've been expanding our use of existing technology in other areas, and we've embraced the efficiencies that it produces. Let's talk about video conferencing for a moment. In most of our 31 districts, after arrest of a criminal defendant's first appearance before a judge in the courtroom is conducted by a camera from the jail. This saves the time and cost of transporting the hundreds, if not thousands, of defendants to the courtroom and back. Many districts also use video conferencing for similar proceedings such as juvenile detention, mental illness hearings, criminal arraignments, or testimony of expert witnesses or KBI lab personnel in Topeka, all with a view toward savings. Our Court of Appeals and the Office of Judicial Administration both use video conferencing for certain activities instead of requiring attorneys and others to sustain expense and come to Topeka. OJA uses it for training court personnel all across the state. The Court of Appeals for oral argument November, at the invitation of Major General Vic Braden of the 35th Infantry Division, I presented a legal education program for him and the lawyers under his command. By the way, they were in Kuwait at the time. And because of the 8-hour time difference, I had to get up at what the military calls O-Dark 30. I thank them for their service to us all, 7,000 miles from their home. The judicial branch has also looked at personnel efficiencies. Our weighted caseload study several years ago allowed us to accurately determine by actual workloads how many judges and court clerks were needed and where they were needed throughout the state. Because the study excluded the 700 employees not working directly in the offices of the clerks of court, in 2016 we conducted a position inventory to address those employees. These assessments, which are continually updated, help us determine needed personnel levels on an ongoing basis. It also allows us to consider the impact of recent developments of technology on those staffing needs. We're currently working with the National Center for State Courts to perform a workload study of our more than 300 court services officers, also known as CSOs. And essentially, they're the ones who supervise offenders. These studies and our increased use of technology have also been valuable tools in modernizing court operations. That in turn benefits the Kansans that we all serve. But as I mentioned from this podium last March, while we are gaining efficiency through them, we're also continuing to lose efficiency through increased turnover of highly experienced judges and employees. Besides retirement, these losses are primarily because of low compensation. For the same reason, we often have had real trouble finding suitable replacements in many of our courthouses. As you may recall, using a grant in 2016, we hired the experts from the National Center for State Courts to study the compensation earned by our court employees and by our district magistrate judges. They looked at compensation levels of these folks in other state court systems and in comparable positions in Kansas local government and private business. And after you authorize judicial branch personnel a 2.5% pay increase last session, for which I do publicly thank you, the National Center then updated its findings and its conclusions. And among other things, it considered recent increases in employee compensation in the sources it examined last year, such as other states' court systems. The founding father of our country, Alexander Hamilton, has often been attributed to saying, "The first duty of society is justice." Seemingly at odds with Hamilton's view is the fact that even with last year's 2.5% increase, nearly one-third of all the employee positions in our justice system still have starting salaries below the 2017 federal poverty level for a family of four. And the fact that every Kansas judicial branch job classification is still below market pay rate, some by as much as 21%. Standing in the gallery now is Ms. Penny Timmons. And Ms. Sean Timmons, over in the corner. She is a trial court clerk four who represents those of our employees who are paid 20.4% below market. Also with her is Ms. Karen Hughes, a word processing tech who represents our employees who are paid below the federal poverty level that I just mentioned. Thomas Jefferson was a great rival of Hamilton's among the founding fathers because, like Reagan, President Jefferson believed in smaller government. Even so, Jefferson also believed that the most sacred of the duties of government is to do equal and impartial justice to to all its citizens. I hope you can appreciate that this most sacred duty of government becomes more difficult to perform than approximately 700 of our justice system's 1,600 employees, or 44% of them, are still paid about 16.5% below market. This includes many court services officers who each year supervise 18,000 convicted criminals on probation, including approximately 3,000 sex offenders. And we can only wonder what Jefferson might have to say about our ability to perform this most sacred duty of government when told that nearly one-third of our employees also need to work jobs outside the judicial branch just to make ends meet. This is 5 times higher than the Kansas average. Now, standing in the gallery is Mr. Brad Shue. He is the CSO of one. He represents the 700 employees who are paid 16.5% below market. With him is Ms. Miranda Cummings, who is a managing court reporter, who represents the approximate 500 employees having to work at least one other job to make ends meet. Let's fast forward from Hamilton and President Jefferson to yet another president, Andrew Jackson, who is considered by many historians to be a great champion of the people. Jackson said, "All the rights secured to the citizens under the Constitution are worth nothing, except guaranteed by them by an independent and virtuous judiciary." So let's look at our judiciary. Among the things the compensation study revealed are that even after last year's 2.5% increase, over 21% is still needed to raise district magistrate judge salaries to market level. And more than one-fourth of our magistrate judges who responded to the survey have indicated that they are seeking employment outside the judicial branch. The number one reason given? Low compensation. The people's champion, Andrew Jackson, was not alone in his beliefs. An Atchison businessman named Robert Green was a delegate at the Wyandotte Convention in 1859, which was established to create a constitution so that Kansas could be admitted to the Union as the 34th state. Green told his fellow delegates, "Everything should be done for the purpose of calling to the bench the best legal talent in the country, as a safeguard to the interests of the people. This is of more importance than anything else that would come before us at this convention." This sentiment was echoed by other delegates. It's a matter of public record, however, that even after last year's increase, today Kansas district judges, the trial judges in your communities, still rank next to last in the nation what they get paid. Kansas is ahead only of New Mexico. Last year from this podium, I said it's human nature for people to devote their time and their money to those things that are most valuable to them. So after hearing these statements of the founders of this country and our state, all Kansans again may want to ask themselves, what value do we place today on the administration of justice in our state? Well, some may respond that although the National Center's work does provide objective market data based on various sources, it has no bearing on the real world here in Kansas. So allow me to share with you our judicial branch reality. Actual numbers establish that because of low pay, we are losing more and more good, experienced people in our branch of government. And actual numbers show that it is hard to recruit suitable replacements. First, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, The current average turnover rate nationally is 3.2%. Ours in the judicial branch, almost five times as high, 15%. Second, we've also seen a large drop in the number of qualified applicants for our positions. Let me provide some examples. Our entry-level positions for our trial court clerks, a trial court clerk too. In 2017, the 19th Judicial District, which is Winfield of Arkansas City, had 11 applicants for two positions. Five of them eventually withdrew, either because they could not take the pay cut, or they already had found a better position elsewhere. So essentially, there were six applicants, down from 42 applicants for two positions in 2010. Unfortunately, the pay raises from that session have not reversed this downward trend for our clerks. Just 2 months ago, the 28th Judicial District, which is Salina in Minneapolis, had only 8 applications for an opening, down from 50 for an opening just 5 years ago. The 5th Judicial District in Corey in Cumberland Falls had only 12 applications for a position, down from 38 just 5 years ago. And the Sedgwick County Court had 5 openings, but only 6 applicants. Only 3 were hired. Last month, December, that court had 3 openings, but only 3 applicants, of which only one was deemed qualified for the job. Trying to fill these particular positions will only become more difficult. Starting pay is $11.80. But recently, Walmart announced that it's raising its minimum wage to $11 per hour and is adding eligibility for bonuses up to $1,000. For our CSO1s, like Mr. Hsu, probation officers, the news is regrettably about the same. For example, in 2016, the 17th Judicial District in Northwest Kansas had only 4 applications for an opening, down from 21 applications in 2005. And unfortunately, the recent pay raises have not reversed this downward trend for CSO1s either. 3 months ago, the 28th Judicial District, Salina, Minneapolis, had only 11 applicants, down from 38 applicants in 2011. The National Center has described some of the hidden cost of underpaying employees, which results in turnover. As mentioned, our judicial branch turnover is nearly 5 times higher than the national average. Among the relevant factors considered by the National Center in this cycle of inefficiency were the time and energy spent on recruiting, interviewing, and hiring new employees, with existing employees trying to cover all the work until the vacancy is filled, and then time and energy is spent on training the new person by existing employees, who again have to put aside their duties. If this increase in turnover and decrease in applicants continues to worsen, at some point we will find ourselves, particularly in the smaller rural counties, with no suitable applicants. And because Kansas statute requires at least one judge per county, that means the only judge in the county will be doing all of the court's work. Putting aside the obvious inefficiencies of that, the real question then becomes, how many judges will be willing to perform all those court functions in those counties? When today, many of our magistrate judges already want to leave their existing workloads for higher paying jobs. In light of this reality, an even more important question may arise. Do you want to continue to keep at least one judge in each of our 105 counties, if we are unable to hire any suitable staff to support them? That's a policy question for this legislature to consider. I take no position on it today. Now, let's get down to brass tacks. Exactly what do all these people in the judicial branch do for the money you currently invested in? Last fiscal year, they processed almost 400,000 new cases filed in the district courts. This caseload included more than 20,000 felony cases and more than 14,000 misdemeanor cases. In addition to supervising the convicted criminals on probation, they protected almost 7,000 children who were in need of care by ruling on requests related to their safety and their well-being. And they protected nearly 14,000 people by issuing restraining orders. To say nothing of the probate, the juvenile, the domestic, the traffic, and the other cases. And among the thousands of civil cases filed were those by Kansas business owners to collect money owed them. Last week, Governor Brownback said from this podium, quote, "We will fight the scourge of human trafficking like no other state and throw that darkness from our borders." In response to his request for us to recognize the efforts of the Attorney General and the legislature on this issue, General Schmidt got a standing ovation. Rightfully so. But with this renewed emphasis on increasing the numbers of people prosecuted for these terrible crimes, we need to remember where the Attorney General and all of the prosecutors of this state will go to do that. The Kansas courts, whose personnel will shoulder these increased caseloads. The same can be said for any other new legislation passed to achieve the worthy goals of protecting human rights, criminalizing conduct, or both. Let me return to a few examples of the many other things that the courts have done. We are all painfully aware of the problems that were disclosed in the city of Ferguson, Missouri. Although municipal court problems of that magnitude have not arisen in Kansas, where Supreme Court has nevertheless been proactive. First, I communicated with the judge who served as the Chief Justice of Missouri at that time. And second, we have created a committee to review bonding practices, fines, and fees of the more than 300 municipal courts in Kansas. Among other things, that committee will examine the operations of these courts and compile a best practices model for them to follow. Committee members from across the state include Representative Brad Ralph of Dodge City. The committee has now met twice with more to come. It will report its ultimate findings to not only our judicial administrator, but also to the League of Kansas Municipalities. With that Municipal Courts Committee as a model, a number of our chief judges have asked the Supreme Court to later form a similar one for the state court system. Now, while best practices and some degree of uniformity are worthy goals, the real foundation for the entire project is a desire to maintain Kansans' faith in their system of justice. So where problems are found, we intend to see that they are fixed. Let's talk a moment about something called specialty courts. Specialty or problem-solving courts differ from the usual courts because they coordinate services provided to criminal offenders with direct supervision by a judge. Most of these are drug courts, which attempt to address an offender's underlying substance abuse problems. Problems that often lead to a frustrating cycle of criminal offenses, incarceration, and then more offenses. National research has shown that drug courts can be effective in reducing offender recidivism. That is, in turn, saves considerable judicial and correctional resources. And to date, some variation of drug courts, ranging from juvenile drug courts to those limited to defendants addicted to methamphetamine, exist in 10 of our 31 judicial districts. But the trade-off for these rewards continues to be more judicial time. They often require intense supervision by judges, in addition to that by their regular probation officers. Despite this extra work, several ward districts are looking to start drug courts in 2018 because they see the benefits for the defendants and for the state of Kansas. Other types of specialty courts have been established with the same goal in mind. Veterans Court in Johnson County is created for those who have committed misdemeanors or low-level felonies and who are older for treatment by the Veterans Administration. Like drug courts, the Veterans Court offers alternatives to incarceration. A recent graduate of this 18-month-long program credits it with turning him away from suicide after his return from a combat tour in Afghanistan. Similarly, Douglas County District Court established a behavioral health court to target those whose mental health issues may have contributed to the low-level nonviolent criminal charges against them. The goal is to dismiss the charges after a period of successful intervention and treatment. And other judicial districts have similar non-traditional courts with similar goals. The 29th Judicial District, Wyandotte County, has mental health court. Lyon County in the 5th Judicial District has home court for supervising low-risk juvenile offenders with capable parental involvement. And 3 districts have juvenile truancy courts. All of these special courts operate pursuant to Supreme Court rule that adopts statewide standards for such courts. My last topic on the state of Kansas judiciary concerns the appellate courts continuing to take their proceedings directly to the people of Kansas. The Court of Appeals has heard its cases argued across the state for years. Recently in Huguenton and Ulysses in Southwest Kansas, as put by colleagues on the Supreme Court, most recently we heard cases in Winfield and in Corey. In the spring, we will be in Northwest Kansas. Like others, that session will be held in the evening so that people who work during the day can come and see for themselves who we are, what we do, and how we do it. To date, Hayes has a record turnout. Nearly 700 people turned out. But Goodland is where Justice Lugar is from, where she grew up. So we may see that record broken if all of her relatives and friends show up. In closing, for the good work you've done for Kansans in these difficult times, I do want to express my gratitude. Now, I'm well aware that you're still facing many challenges during this legislative session, maybe some of the biggest ones I've heard. From my remarks this afternoon, clearly one challenge is this. If things continue on this financial path in the judicial branch, there are serious concerns about our ability to administer the quality of justice that Kansans have come to expect and they deserve. But I believe that you will continue to take fair account of the needs of the judicial branch, our judges, and employees. As we continue to enforce the constitutional rights held so dear by Ronald Reagan, and continue to provide justice embraced by the founders of not only this nation, but also this great state. I began with a quote from President Reagan. Let me end with one from another president, our fellow Kansan, Dwight Eisenhower. 60 years ago, President Eisenhower said, "If civilization is to survive, it must choose the rule of law." We honor not only the principle of the rule of law, but also those judges, legislators, lawyers, law-abiding citizens who actively work to preserve our liberties under law. His words ring so true today. If justice, liberty, and the rule of law are not to wither in Kansas, but to thrive, then as the man from Abilene said, we all need to work together. need your help as legislators. It's nice to have an occasion like this to get to know each other just a little better, even though I'm the one doing all the talking. So we invite you to a reception inside the old Supreme Court chamber after my remarks. My fellow judges and I look forward to introducing ourselves and visiting with you there, and to talk about how to implement what President Eisenhower said. I bid you Godspeed, and to wish you, as they say on ships, fair winds and following seas. Thank you very much.